Why do grown men fancy children? Little children. Why should they respond this way when most people respond to adults? It doesn't make sense. Meanwhile, the numbers of paedophiles seem to be increasing. Dr. Amy Likens has been studying men who go for children, both here and in Canada. She's also a clinical psychologist at the University of New England in Armidale. So, why those numbers?
I'd have to say it probably has more to do with the internet and public availability of different types of erotica. That prior to that, it was very difficult to get access to anything other than mainstream pornography. Whereas now we can access it at essentially lightning speed, anything that we want with a click of a button at home, you know, in the privacy of our own homes. So I think that it's given people probably a bit of a false sense of security in terms of what they're looking at and downloading and enjoying.
So. As a psychologist, however, how do you differentiate between men who simply go for underage partners who look like small adults, you know, the famous 14 or 15 year old who, oh, I thought she was 20.
Right.
Now, that is a young person with some adult characteristics versus the very young, the toddlers, even the babies. How do you differentiate?
How we would differentiate that is the paedophiles, how we would define paedophiles from a psychological perspective, would be the people who are looking at no pubertal development whatsoever.
Clearly children.
Clearly children, yeah. And you've got a lot of debate within the field about whether, well, you know, they've reached menstruation, so they're able to reproduce. And the data actually show that it isn't until about 2 years after reaching menstruation for women that they can actually regularly become pregnant. So there's a lot of debate as to whether saying that this is not a normal attraction, whereas maybe in the past it would have been considered a normal attraction, but other people are arguing that not really. They are children. You know, this is usually about ages 11 to 14.
Well, Juliet famously, of course, was 14, Romeo and Juliet. And so in the romance of yesteryear, you can actually make a reasonable case for there being an attraction to younger women. Of course, you can call Juliet a young woman, but when you're talking about the 1 to 5 year olds, how can you, as a psychologist, explain that attraction in grown men?
Yeah, it's a really tricky one. There's been a lot of theories sort of trying to understand paedophilia, obviously, because it's a pretty touchy subject and good reason to understand why people might have this preference so that we can try and prevent them acting out on it. There have been a number of theories. So looking at things like conditioning of sexual response, that maybe at some point in the person's past, sexual response was associated with a younger person. Maybe it gets carried on to the future. But problem with that theory being that it's really hard to actually condition sexual preference, and it's hard to decondition sexual preference. Other theories are looking at kind of the abuser hypothesis, where they show that adults who go on to sexually offend against children tend to report anyway higher rates of abuse themselves in their childhood. Some problems with that also are that we've done studies where they said, okay, you know, how many of you have been convicted of a child offense? How many of you have actually experienced abuse yourselves? You get about 2/3 saying, oh yeah, I was abused. If you say, okay, we're going to have you take a polygraph following that, that goes down to about 1/3. So you never really know if you're judging on self-report. If there's no history, you documented history of that, it's really hard to determine whether that's actually true or not. The best evidence now is really suggesting that there's neurodevelopmental problems. So the research that's been looking at this has shown that people with a paedophilic preference have lower IQ than adult sex offenders, say. They're shorter in stature. They tend to have higher rates of non-right-handedness. They do poorer in school. They have a higher rate of reported head injuries prior to age 13. After age 13, no difference. Different brain volume. So we're looking at, some studies have found differences in gray matter. Other studies from some of my colleagues have found differences in white matter tracts. So basically what all of this is pointing to is some sort of problem that's happened during development that's affected the brain, potentially cross-wiring it, where you might have sort of an affiliative response to children where it's a caretaking response most of us would have of, you know, it's a cute child, I want to make sure that it's taken care of, versus having a sexual response to a potential sexual target. That's essentially getting, it seems to be, what the research is starting to show is that it seems to be cross-wired for some reason. That
something is wrong with the brain.
Something happened in the brain. Yeah. As far as exactly what that is, we don't really know yet.
Well, of course, that can be an excuse for all sorts of criminal behaviour. You know, I'm sorry, Your Honour, it was my brain that did it. There's something in my genes or something happened to rewire my corpus callosum or whatever. But the thing that is really difficult to understand is why a grown-up would want to take advantage of a really young child and get off on it. You see, there has to be some sort of sexual reward, response, enjoyment out of it. And yet the kid doesn't want to take part, presumably. He's bewildered by the whole thing.
Yeah. You can get all sorts of rationalizations from people who engage in sex offending against kids. Some people will argue that I'm teaching them, it's my expression of love for them. I've had clients who have said, oh, she wanted it. She put my hand there. And
a three-year-old put your hand there.
I think this was a 10 or 11-year-old. But,
okay.
But, you know, so you get the gamut of rationalizations. I think what we're looking at when we're looking at sex offending, if we're looking at people who have a pedophilic preference, and let me separate that now, that the sex offenders come in a range. So some people will have a pedophilic preference. Other people will have offended against children who don't come out as pedophilic on the types of assessments that we would do. And so they're an interesting population because, well, how did that happen, right? The ones who are coming out pedophilic, what we're looking at is people who have a sexual attraction to children and have actually engaged in sexual behavior with a child. And to sort of understand like why that might happen, you look at circumstances. So I've met some people who have a pedophilic preference. You'd never know because they come across completely pro-social. You just never have any idea. And I think a testament to their ability to control their urges. So that's more so what we're seeing now, and where the research is going is looking at what we would call sort of gold star pedophiles, where we're looking at people who are attracted to children. They don't want to act out on it. You know, they don't want to get into a situation where they're harming children or getting into trouble themselves. And so what can we do, I guess, as a society to try to help them in that?
One of the key things which I hinted at before is trying to do something with a person who doesn't want it. Now, this can go for adult behavior, trying to persuade a woman or a man, depending on what your taste is, to do something they genuinely do not want to do. And what is the mind of the perpetrator who nonetheless insists on doing it? In other words, for most people, sex is enjoyable because it's mutually fun.
Yeah.
The other person likes it. And if the other person simply doesn't want it, how can they still get the pleasure out of it? How can the perpetrator still get the pleasure out of it? That's what's hard to understand.
Yeah, I think there you're looking at the possibility of other personality characteristics getting involved. I was just reading last night a really horrific description of a video that sort of self-admitted pedophile ended up watching, and it was a 1.5-year-old who was being, well, the person was pretty sadistic. He was, you know, urinating on the child and all sorts of horrible things. And I think in those kinds of cases, you're looking at the combination of pedophilia, but also sadism, where people actually enjoy other people experiencing pain or suffering. Looking into personality characteristics such as antisociality, that's another thing, a really big characteristic that predisposes people to recidivism. They have these antisocial tendencies. They don't care what other people think. They don't have empathy for other people. And I think that that's one explanation for some people. Other people, again, will have the rationalizations of, no, but actually the person really liked it, when, you know, all evidence to the contrary, that they're not showing any enjoyment.
They get off on having power over the other person, and yet power over an 18-month-year-old. I mean, any adult can get power
would have
over
that.
A kid.
Yeah, some people are just going to get off on that more than others, that it's part of their sexual drive.
Which came from where? Abuse for them? Or is it back to the rewiring not being efficient?
Yeah, disturbed childhood. People with antisocial personality disorder tend to have lower physiological response to threatened pain. So if you hook them up to a machine where it's measuring their physiological response and say, you know, I'm going to be shocking you, most people would get pretty stressed by that situation, whereas you don't see in a lot of people with antisocial characteristics or psychopathy that kind of response. And so there's a, you know, an argument that maybe they're just not learning, that the types of things that make us learn, say, oh, don't touch that stove, it's hot. We're probably going to touch that stove once just to see, but we'll learn not to touch that stove again. Whereas people with more antisocial characteristics, a lot of them don't. And so, you know, it doesn't matter that feedback that they might be getting from the kid that they're engaging in activity with, that either they don't read it or they don't care.
You said some of your clients. So do you treat these people as a clinical psychologist?
I did. I haven't actually been in practice since I took my position here in Australia. But when I was in Canada, I was seeing clients who were referred from probation and parole. I saw medical referrals, so people coming in with their own concerns about their own sexual attractions, looking for help for that. I saw a couple people who had offended against their own children. I saw the gamut of explanations. It was interesting because at that time I was under supervised practice. And my main supervisor at that point was Ray Blanchard, who's now retired, but pretty high in the field and worked on DSM-5 and all that. And I'd go in with my report ready to sort of review it with him. And, oh, it's the partner retribution story. You know, after so many years in practice for him, he's seen the same types of rationalizations coming through. So we saw a lot of guys who would say, oh, you know, it's my partner trying to get back at me. She's just making this up. A lot of guys were, oh, I just looked at it. I was just curious, but, you know, I'm not actually interested in it. Some people saying that they would keep erotica, you know, child erotica to trade so they could get access to what they wanted and they'd trade with other people. I saw a few guys who really worried me. I mean, you know, a lot of them I probably wouldn't want my own children if I had any around them, but some that had those sort of sadistic characteristics and the antisocial.
What could you do for them?
Well, what we would do with them in that treatment setting was recommend group treatment if they were in the Toronto area, but we'd get referrals from all over Ontario and sometimes even outside of Ontario. So there's not as much we could do for them other than making recommendations for what they could do where they lived. Yeah, put them in group therapy, try to set in on a session or two of that. And it was really interesting because it was mostly a room of people who had admitted. That's sort of the first step, is admitting, yes, I did this, and yes, I am attracted to children. They were. Because a lot of them do come in saying, this didn't happen, or no, I'm not attracted to kids. That's crazy. But it was really interesting watching them sort of regulate each other. So one of the sessions I sat in was right before Halloween, which hadn't really occurred to me as an issue prior to sitting in on that session. But of course, like, lots of children around, so not so many monitored, that could be potentially quite tempting for people who are attracted to them. So what they were doing was basically problem solving of, okay, how are you going to make sure that you don't put yourself in a situation where you're going to get into trouble? So don't turn on your light, be with friends, don't hand out candy, go to somewhere where you know you're going to be around adults and not have any interaction with children. And just sort of watching them interact with each other was really interesting. I remember one guy who was saying, oh, you know, I was sitting down at the skate park and, you know, I saw this guy sitting on the bench and I ID'd him. You know, I knew what he was up to. I could see it in his eyes and really felt like I should do something. And, you know, he was looking, I think, for support of like, yeah, you know, good for you. And everybody was like, what are you doing there? Why are you sitting down there and tempting yourself at the skate park? Where has that behavioral regulation stopped for you? So that's one of the things that they would do in that treatment setting. You've got obviously different treatment models. Some people throw them in prison, throw the key out. I don't think that's necessarily always the best way to deal with people.
Dr. Amy Larkins from the University of New England, and she returns next week with some thoughts about the internet and how it may be fostering addiction in men who profess no previous inclinations that way until they go online. And there's more on paedophilia and brains in All in the Mind, some previous programs. And All in the Mind is now back on air with its new season on RN.